Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Hey, thanks to everybody that donated during the winter fund drive. It ended on Tuesday, and the public affairs shows here on WMNF came up a little bit short. This one came up about $1,000 short. So we hope that you'll make a contribution to WMNF by calling our main number, which is 813-238-8001. That's 813-238-8001, and make a contribution. Help us fix that shortfall. Well, coming up, we'll hear what President Trump is proposing in his new budget to do with Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. But first, one listener comment about yesterday's program, on which we discussed the new book, Drying Up, about the looming freshwater crisis here in Florida. Here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's program.
Thanks for another fantastic show about our water supply in Florida. I come from the Virgin Islands, where every single home, restaurant, and hotel has a cistern as required by law, and they divert water runoff into the ocean. In other words, we save this drinking water as it's falling from the sky. Everybody on the island knows that the water is clean because, you know, if it's your water, you make sure you build the cistern the right way. Smaller businesses crop up, such as cistern cleaners, or if the cistern's cracked, there's someone to repair it, and then there's water delivery for people who are wasteful. Another thing is that you don't have to have laws for policing water use. It's all the water that you have in the world is in your basement. You are not going to let the water run, which you wash the dishes, and you're not going to take hour-long showers. You're certainly not going to throw it on your driveway or on lawn. So there's just, policing just stops. Do what you want with your own drinking water. And lastly, it's so important, it increases water security. You can't have a Flint, Michigan in a completely decentralized water system. You also don't put your community in peril by having perhaps a private company come in to desalinate the water or in other ways filter the water and perhaps sending the prices of water sky high, which isn't good for anyone. But most importantly is after the two hurricanes that hit the Virgin Islands, you didn't hear about us as much as Puerto Rico, even though we got hit far, far worse. And the reason is our water supply was spread out at the points of use, which is in everybody's home already, even if your house was demolished.
Well, that was a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program about Florida's pending water crisis. Well, President Trump tweeted over the weekend promising, "We will not be touching your Social Security and Medicare in the fiscal 2021 budget." One day later, he released his budget, and as the Wall Street Journal reported, it showed that Trump is doing exactly what he promised not to do in his budget proposal. The Journal reported that in the $4.8 trillion budget proposal released by the president on Monday, it includes steep reductions in social safety net programs, including Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Here to talk about what the president is proposing is Max Richmond, president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and he joins us on the phone. Max, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Wow. Thank you for inviting me to your program.
So, Max, tell me, in the president's proposal, he has been promising all along not to cut Social Security and Medicare. What is he actually proposing to do?
Well, we need to talk about what he's proposing to do, but we also need to talk about whether you can count on what he says to be accurate. Because, you know, he's been all over the place on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. In the campaign, when he ran in 2016, there were, I think, 17 candidates running for the Republican nomination, and he was the only one who many times, and I watched many of those debates, made a commitment to not cut into Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And at the same time, the budgets that he has submitted, not just this one, but every budget that he has submitted has taken a whack at those programs. And yes, he tweeted one thing the other day, sent a budget that contradicted that tweet. A few weeks ago, he was in Davos, Switzerland, and he was interviewed. Maybe he thought nobody would be paying attention to an interview taking place in Switzerland, but he said cutting entitlements, I think I don't consider these entitlements, they're earned benefits, at least Social Security and part of Medicare, but cutting entitlements is the easiest of all things to do, and it was something that they would take a good look at down the road. So the budget, going back to your original question, the budget that the president submitted puts a lot of pressure on vulnerable citizens, vulnerable seniors, and it's our position that they should not be the ones that pay for the tax policies that the administration has passed in the last Congress that clearly favor the wealthy and large corporations. And that I'm referring specifically to the president's and the Republican tax cut of 2017. This budget, once again, as I mentioned, previous budgets have done, is not consistent with the president's promises during the campaign and what he just tweeted about a few days ago. Enormous cuts to the Medicare program, almost $500 billion over 10 years. That will compromise health care access for millions of seniors. Cutting Medicaid by $1 trillion over 10 years. You know, Medicaid is not just for poor people. Medicaid is there to help pay for nursing home care. Who's in a nursing home? Well, mostly older people and disabled people. And they have spent down their assets. They weren't poor, but they became poor because they had to spend $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year for a nursing home. And in a year or two, they were poor. They needed the Medicaid program. And this is this budget will be denying millions of them access to nursing home care and home care. And there are a lot of other changes in the that take place in the budget that have serious negative impact on older people the disabled, and maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah, we will. Max Richmond is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. He's on live with us now on WMNF. So also in that budget, in addition to cutting $478 billion from Medicare over 10 years, as you said, $1 trillion from Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act subsidies over 10 years, he wants to cut Social Security, disability insurance, and SSI supplemental security insurance benefits by $63 billion over 10 years. Talk about that for a moment. Who gets disability insurance and SSI?
Well, you know, these are the Social Security disability insurance is available. And again, this is an earned benefit. You know, part of the payroll tax, a portion of it goes to the disability program in the event that a worker becomes disabled and is unable to continue working. And what is so disturbing about the approach the administration is taking is they're not just saying, well, we're going to cut the payment. They're saying we're going to make it harder to qualify. We're going to make it more onerous, more difficult, more hoops to jump through. They are adding a layer of a review. It's important that there be disability reviews in the event that someone is recovers from a disability and is able to work again. But the way the administration is approaching it is going to make it much more difficult for someone who has a disability to undergo another layer of review that will make it more difficult to continue those payments. And, you know, I wish people in the administration that are behind this effort to reduce disability payments by making it more difficult to qualify and to continue would take the time to go see people who actually are disabled, who can't get out of bed, let alone go to additional medical appointments to get verification that they're disabled. And it just seems like this is about as cruel a budget when it comes to the disability program, as well as some of these other points, as is imaginable.
I think the president and his supporters think that everybody who's on disability is faking it. That's what they think.
Yeah, you know, they don't understand the reality, in my opinion. And I've been working at this for quite a while. It is so difficult, first of all, to qualify for disability. The majority of applicants fail to qualify. And then many of those will appeal. An appeal, I know of a case here in Pennsylvania, and a woman, her claim was denied. She appealed. She waited 763 days for that appeal to be resolved. You know, a lot of people will die while they're waiting for their claims to be approved. Many of the people that qualify for disability, we find that they die not that long into the time that they're receiving claims. These people, for the most part, really need this help. It's going to be denied in many cases by this budget.
I want to take you to a Senate hearing yesterday where the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin was testifying, and Mnuchin, who was appointed by the president, says we are not touching Social Security. Let's listen to what he said yesterday in the Senate committee.
But you do not disagree. This budget actually requests a cut of $90 billion for seniors on Social Security, correct?
I believe it's not a cut. It's a reduction in the rate of increase, and it's not to benefits of people on Social Security.
So I show a cut for student loans, Social Security, persons with disability, for farmers, and for women and children who seek assistance through SNAP and TANF. If that is not a cut, then I would love to talk to you about what it is this administration values and what they see, how these groups and important individuals in our communities are being affected. I'd love to talk to you about that, but I disagree. And that's my concern, is this administration says one thing, but their actions are just the opposite. And I think it is important for us to really talk the true facts and not what you come here and read in your statements about what the administration claims that they are doing to the benefit of our communities. Because I can tell you, when I go home to Nevada, there are still people struggling. And I do want to talk to you about, when you plan and you put together this tax bill that you've talked about and the economic growth, particularly when it comes to the budget, I keep hearing you saying that you're talking about the budget that shows gross domestic product growth will climb to 3.1%, and that's your basis. Is that correct, that you're basing it on for the next 8 years a 3% or 3.1% growth?
It ranges between 2.8 and 3.1, but let me just comment on Social Security. I'm looking at the mandatory programs of Social Security starting at 1038, and it goes up every single year through 2032, 1906. So I don't see any cuts. Social Security mandatory programs are going up consistently in our budget every single year.
Good. So what I hear from you today is there's going to be absolutely, there's no request in your current budget to cut anything having to do with Social Security.
Again, the absolute mandatory programs of Social Security.
Well, don't read it to me. Just talk to me. Tell me. Social Security is what I'm hearing.
I believe there's a cut in the rate of increase, not an absolute cut. But again, I'd be happy to follow up and go through this.
Let's talk about it. Because if you're cutting Social Security and the resources and the individuals and the time for the people who work in Social Security to help people in need, then you're impacting the people of need. So let's talk about that.
Well, that was the Nevada Senator, Senator Masto, questioning Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, Senator Catherine Cortez Masto from Nevada, Democrat, questioning Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin yesterday. And let me go back to Max Richmond from the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. What did you make of Mnuchin's testimony yesterday?
Well, pretty slippery, isn't it? I think Senator Cortez Masto's she was really trying to elicit some accurate information, and the Treasury Secretary was dodging and weaving. That was pretty obvious. You know, if you are cutting the rate of growth for Social Security benefits, and you're not keeping up with the need, what you really need to look at is how are the people that are affected going to be impacted? If they're negatively impacted, you can call it a cut or a cut in the rate of growth. You're hurting people, and that's what this budget does. It hurts people. She was really getting to some specifics that I think need to be clarified. And she did a good job trying to get this information out of the Treasury Secretary. The Social Security budget to run the program, to administer the program, a lot of that money, most of that money, comes from the payroll tax itself, and that is being reduced. So if you, and anybody that has had to deal with Social Security has found it more difficult in the last few years, because the budget has not kept up with the true cost of running these programs with inflation factored in. That's why you have offices closing early. That's why you have so much trouble getting to talk to someone on their 800 number. I wish the secretary, it'd be nice and helpful if the Secretary of the Treasury, he won't do it, but if he would call the 800 number of Social Security and try to get some information, he will be on the phone on hold forever. I testified at a Ways and Means Committee hearing about a year and a half ago on the administrative budget. This was the previous budget, which also was inadequate, just as this one is. And to illustrate the point that I was trying to make about inadequate funding for the Social Security administration, I called, as I was sitting at the witness table, the 800 number. I was put on hold. 45 minutes later, at the end of my testimony, I was still on hold. Most people can't wait that long to get an answer to a question. And so, you know, we have seen the administration dance around terms and try to avoid answering. The real question is this budget hurting people? That's what it's about, whatever you call it. And even, you know, to expand on that, I remember the acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, former congressman, also still involved in, with running the Office of Management and Budget. He said when he was confronted with what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, the Social Security Disability Program, and how that is going to be reduced in terms of the benefits available to people, he said, well, so that's really not part of Social Security. Really? It's called the Social Security Disability Insurance Fund. It's paid for by payroll taxes, paid out of withholding with the FICA tax, Federal Insurance Contribution Act, but all of a sudden it's not Social Security. Thereby, you can try, I don't think it works, but you can try to say we're not cutting Social Security because the Social Security Disability Program isn't really part of Social Security. That'd be news to the people that run the program and to anybody who is attempting to get Social Security disability benefits. So, I think a lot of people are tired of the terms that are used to justify some of the statements that have been made by the White House that these programs are not being cut. Let's just ask them, is this hurting people? And if it's hurting people, it's wrong.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends in the building trades who worked with their hands over the course of their lives, and many of them have injuries that they suffered on the job, and they had to apply for Social Security disability. That's towards the end of their lives. Their back, their neck, their knees all went out, and that's one of the ways they're getting by. Max, I want to ask you about what's now called SNAP, used to be called food stamps, TANF, Temporary Aid to Needy Families. That used to be called welfare, and Meals on Wheels. The president is proposing cuts in all three of those programs. Talk about Meals on Wheels, TANF, and SNAP, and how, especially how food stamps and TANF intersect with senior citizens.
Well, it's pretty clear that these programs are programs that seniors, whether it's SNAP or Meals on Wheels, seniors predominantly are the ones that rely on these programs. One of them that is well known is the Meals on Wheels program. The president's budget eliminates all the federal block grant funding that helps pay for the Meals on Wheels program. And just as I just said, I would encourage the Treasury Secretary to call the 800 number, try to talk to someone at Social Security and find out how difficult that is. I would encourage the federal officials that are involved with reducing funding for the Meals on Wheels program to get in a van that delivers these meals and spend the day with the driver delivering the meals and see what it means to someone who's homebound, can't get out of the house, is relying on this meal as probably the only hot meal of the day, is relying on the interaction with a live person that may come to the door, with maybe the only interaction with a real person that day, what that means, and then go back and try to feel good about cutting the program that provides that kind of help. Another program that does not get the kind of attention that some of the ones we're talking about, it's called LIHEAP. It's an acronym. It stands for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. This is a program that makes it possible for people to stay warm, to pay their heating expenses in the winter, and stay cool in the summer, especially in parts of the country that are very, very hot. The budget eliminates this program totally. And you try explaining how that's right to someone living in the Northeast that can't keep their homes warm and can't pay their energy bills. I think the budget, this is, as I said a few minutes ago, it's a cruel budget, and I'm hoping that the Congress will reject some of these provisions, and I'm fairly confident that they will make adjustments and make the budget fairer to the people that rely on these programs.
Is the president's budget dead on arrival? I mean, do the Senate and House usually look at the president's budget and say, not so much. We'll go our own way, what is the take on the two major?
I hope it's dead on arrival, but you know, it is the president's budget. Whether it's dead on arrival or not, I think it says an awful lot about the priorities of this administration. Cutting taxes for the wealthy, cutting taxes for corporations, and really sticking it to some of the most vulnerable people in our country.
All right. Well, Max Richmond, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. What's the website for your organization?
It's ncpssm.org. We also have a 800 number if people want more information. It's 1-800-966-1935. That's the year Social Security became law. 1-800-966-1935.
Max Richmond, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thanks. Max Richmond is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And by way of background, he was born in Munich, Germany, grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. He graduated cum laude from Harvard College and received his law degree from Georgetown University Law School. And he spent 16 years on Capitol Hill as a congressional staffer. Well, this is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa, 88.5. And yesterday, or rather on Tuesday, we ended our fund drive. And some of the public affairs shows came up short, and we're hoping to make that up. We came up about $1,000 short on this show. We want to thank a few people who have made contributions in the last few minutes. Thanks to Kenneth McCall in Tampa made a $200 contribution. His favorite show is Route 66. Kenneth, thanks for that nice contribution. Richard Barrett from Tampa made an $88.50 donation. Thank you very much, Richard, for making that contribution. And Harvey Dunn made a donation. His favorite show is the Monday Morning Show. He made an $88.50 donation. You can still make a contribution by calling our main number, 813-238-8001. Or you can also make your contribution online on our website, wmnf.org. Well, let's open up the phone lines. We haven't done this in a while on this program. Let's open up the phone lines and see what people want to talk about. We could talk about what Max told us, that there are going to be cuts to Medicare and Social Security disability insurance and Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act and block grant programs that help fund Meals on Wheels and the low-income home energy assistance program. And we could talk about that. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Max was is a big supporter of Medicare, and there is a big debate right now going on, and it happens a lot on cable news, and that is the Democrats who support Medicare for All, which is an expansion of the Medicare program, are being labeled as socialists. And that debate, especially if you watch some of the cable news networks like Fox and MSNBC, they're saying that this debate, in which Democrats are branded as socialists because they support Medicare for All, is going to hurt the Democrats. There are some good pieces on the history of Democrats being called socialists. Those calls go back to the 1930s, when Democrats were being called socialists for programs like the minimum wage and like labor laws. In the early 1960s, before we had Medicare, Ronald Reagan was critical of Medicare. He called it socialist, and he warned people of all sorts of dire things that would happen if we had Medicare for seniors in this country, Let's go back and listen to an early 1960s recording that Ronald Reagan, who later became president, at this point he was a spokesperson for GE and a Hollywood actor. This is what he said. This is what he warned us about when he was warning us about socialism in the early 1960s and saying that socialism would be ushered in by Medicare, and Medicare would have all sorts of dire consequences. Let's listen to the predictions from the early 1960s from Ronald Reagan.
My name is Ronald Reagan. I have been asked to talk on several subjects that have to do with the problems of the day. Now, back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said, under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. James Madison, in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, "Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest heights that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country is something to be envied anyplace. The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other. But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. A doctor would be reluctant to say this. Well, like you, I'm only a patient, so I can say it in his behalf. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients. They're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. And from here it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. Take it into your own occupation or that of your husband. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods, determine his employment. From here, it's a short step to all the rest of socialism, to determining his pay. And pretty soon, your son won't decide when he's in school where he will go or what he will do for a living. He will wait for the government to tell him where he will go to work and what he will do. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in world history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, a little group of men, the founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom was built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today, and strangely, we let democracy begin to assume the aspect of majority rule is all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this? Well, you and I can do a great deal. We can write to our congressmen, to our senators. We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on these individual liberties and freedoms. And at the moment, the key issue is we do not want socialized medicine. If you don't, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until one day, as Norman Thomas said, we will awake to find that we have socialism. And if you don't do this, and if I don't do it, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Ronald Reagan, the early 1960s, before Medicare was passed, warning of the dire consequences of passing Medicare, and saying that doctors would no longer have freedom under Medicare. They would have a loss of patients. They would be told, they would be forced to move their practice. The government would dictate all sorts of things to them. And that soon your sons will have the government telling him where to work and what kind of job he'll have and when he's going to get paid. Those are the kind of dire consequences predicted by Ronald Reagan under Medicare. And then we've got Medicare in 1965. Did it work? Did it work? Were you around back in 1965? Did you see any change in your parents or grandparents or great-grandparents when Medicare finally came in? Were your grandparents less free back then? What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And did we see those kind of dire consequences that Ronald Reagan predicted? Did we lose our freedom because of Medicare? 813-239-9663. Of course, there's a big debate, especially on cable television. The candidates are being warned not to embrace Medicare for All. They're being told by many of the panelists on some of the shows. Thanks to Chris Jewell in Seminole, who just made a $50 contribution online. Thank you very much. And Chris, thank you very much. It says, my sanity during these insane times is periodically abated by radioactivity. This show is a must-have. Thank you very much. You can make your contribution by going online. Go to WMNF.org. I think with that, we're probably 6 or 7 donations short of reaching our goal for radioactivity. Let's take some phone calls. Bill Grace is our phone producer today. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, what's on your mind today?
Yes. I think I was listening to some news last night, and what I heard about Trump when he encroached in the DOJ, let's see, his I just didn't like what he did when he texted out tweeted out what he tweeted out, and Roger Stone didn't get what Roger Stone was supposed to get. What's going to happen is that from now on, any other president will be able to do those things, and they can't say anything about it, no matter who, Democrat or Republican president. And I think that's really, really bad. It's really going to hurt the United States, because he could do anything. He's just emboldened now. And any president can do anything, and no one can say anything because he's made it precedent.
Well, Gino, do you want it to go back to the old way where presidents were, for the most part, very quiet about any sort of court proceeding? They stayed away, whether it was a court proceeding involving them or a court proceeding involving anyone else, that the presidents, because of their power, traditionally would just not answer questions about what they thought the outcome of a court case should be. In this case, the president is saying that the punishment for Roger Stone is way too much, and criticizing the prosecutors in the case. But would you like it to go back the other way, or do you think that we'll never go back to the way it was, where presidents stayed out of these kind of situations?
I think it can never probably go back to the way it was. One thing about that is, if you go to court and you get a guilty plea, not a guilty plea, but a verdict, guilty verdict, then what should it be? But not only that, the prosecutors, one of them resigned, and the other ones, their reputation is damaged from my understanding. I mean, there's only so much that a president should be able to do. Now, sure, he has the power of pardon, but that was the case. He should have let it went on and then pardon him.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we claim in this country is that the judiciary is independent of politics, that judges make up their minds not based on the power of people in office. The judges make up their mind and issue their rulings based on law and their interpretation of the law. So we are always able to say that to other countries, that politics plays no role in whether somebody gets locked up or not. But in this case, politics is playing a role where the president is saying the sentence was much too harsh.
Right, but see, that also not only kicks over there, that kicks over into most likely the judges that's on the Supreme Court. That power goes over there, too. If he can make that same tweet when it comes to that decision, then what makes him not be able to do it and change the direction of that court, which truly supposedly had no encroachment into politics?
Yeah, I don't know where it goes. I mean, my hope is that the next president just pulls back and doesn't get involved in making pronouncements about court cases when they're about to be decided.
Right.
All right, okay. Gino, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. Randy writes this, Ronald Reagan pouring on the fear factor, same as today. Imagine that, writes Randy. Kevin writes this, like the War of the Worlds by Orson Welles, Ronnie scared the hell out of me, writes Kevin. And then Brett writes, who did Reagan make that anti-Medicare speech for? Who paid for it? You know, I'm not sure who paid for it. I should look that up. I think the American Medical Association was really putting on a campaign to stop Medicare because I think they honestly believed that Medicare would be damaging to doctors and the medical profession. I was just talking to somebody the other day who is on Medicare, and she told me doctors these days love Medicare. She can go anywhere. You know, sometimes if you have private insurance, maybe you've had this problem. If you have private insurance and you call up and try to get a doctor's appointment, the first question you'll be asked is, do you have insurance and who's it with? It's not, what are you aching from? And then when you say that you've got Advent or Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever you've got, the doctor's office will say yes or no, depending on whether or not they take that kind of insurance. But my friend says that wherever she goes for her various medical needs, and she says she's on Medicare, every doctor she calls will take her right away. 813-239-9663. Sarah writes this, wow, what a dishonest manipulator. Economics already determines where anyone works. If there are too many doctors or specialists in one town, economics would suggest relocating, writes Sarah in Arcadia. People responding to that Ronald Reagan message from about 1962, warning about the dangers of Medicare, that Medicare would bring on socialism in the country. Let's go to Tim in Lutz. Hey, Tim, you're on WMNF. Hi, Tim.
I'm just curious. Hi, how are you?
Good.
When anybody does this, and then I'm going to do it. So my question for the whole audience is, look, I think what Trump did was wrong. So there's no doubt about that part. But I don't think it started with him. I think if you look back, I think President Obama ruled weighed in early on the Trayvon Martin case and a couple of the other cases where he condemned the police force before there was a trial or an investigation. Some of those didn't come out too well, but I mean, some of them the police should have been prosecuted and weren't, but he weighed in early on those too. And I think just having any kind of influence over the court system, probably not a good plan. He didn't weigh in through justice though. He just did it himself. But I don't know that it doesn't send a similar message to anyone that, hey, here's what I want to happen. I think Trump's just transparent with his manipulation, and I don't think we've ever had that before. I suspect there's always been the president calling up the folks that work for him and going, I expect this to be the outcome. I just think Trump sends out his messages on what he wants to do via tweet. And then the only other thing I would ask,
Tim, let me just ask you though: did what Obama say about Trayvon Martin or any other case, did that influence prosecutors or the outcome in those cases?
Well, sure it does.
Did. How did it change the outcome in Trayvon Martin's case?
So it didn't change the outcome in Trayvon Martin's case, but it ran the risk of influencing it.
Right, but can you give me any case of where Obama spoke out about a case and that changed the outcome?
Yeah, I think there was a one where the police officers got condemned up in Ohio somewhere. And it
I'll have to look that up. In this case, it looks like President Trump's tweet resulted in the Justice Department stepping in, changing the recommendation for how long a sentence Roger Stone should get, and the four prosecutors on the case removing themselves from the process because they disagreed with the political interference. So if there was, if Obama had that impact on the Trayvon Martin case, and I know he didn't because the prosecutors just plowed ahead. And Trayvon Martin's killer got off. So there wasn't. I think that the complaint now is the president is getting involved in a case and he's having an impact.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying I think the manipulation has always been there. I just think most people did it behind the scenes and they were quiet about it. I think in this case you've got somebody who does it transparently, and there's a large group that doesn't like it, and I agree with you. But I had the larger opinion came from the first guy. I'm interested to know if the listeners think that the reaction on Social Security and the reaction towards this anti-socialism thing, if that's not a reflection of maybe Obama policies during those last 8 years that went a little too far in a certain population's mind, and then now they're seeing this as a course correction, or whether it's just Trump being authoritarian and cutting this and cutting that and social programs. I guess I'm just
all right. Well, let's see what the audience thinks. Tim, thanks a lot. We'll do that. Yeah, I'll ask that question. All right, so there's Tim. Do you think that this is a reaction towards overreach during the Obama term? I can remember going to a protest by Republicans and Tea Party members in 2010, right here in Tampa, where I was told that the Affordable Care Act, or so-called Obamacare, would usher in death panels, and that Granny would be dying under the Affordable Care Act. You may remember those times too. There were all sorts of horrible predictions about what would happen under the Affordable Care Act. None of them came true. Let's go to Guy, who's on the road in Brandon. Hey, Guy, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, my issue is about the Social Security. It seems like from the very beginning, when you had the plan get developed and they brought it out, the conservative side has always been against the idea of Social Security, workers' rights, and things of that nature. And they really haven't changed their point of view through all these years. And so now they want to call Social Security an entitlement, totally ignoring the fact that you, I, anybody else who get a paycheck is paying a tax to be set aside to help take care of our issues and our needs as we get older and get ready to go towards retirement age. I'm not hearing any pushback that much in a very vigorous way from the Democratic side. Now, I'm a Democrat, and it seems like today's Democrat has no fire in the belly anymore to come out with facts and take a stand, for the people. They always say that they're, for the little guy and whatnot, but I'm not hearing as much as I think I should hear from them. Maybe I expect too much from politicians in general, because I'm just very, very concerned that while they're accusing the liberal side of moving towards socialism and communism, I see the conservative side slowly pushing us in that direction to where what little bit of democracy we have left right now, if we go by books like 1984 and everything else, we can get pushed towards a totalitarian dictatorship, and wonder, well, how did this happen? That's what I see going on right now. What do you guys think?
All right, Guy, thanks a lot. I think the Republicans certainly want to free up corporations to do a whole lot more and have a whole lot more power. I'm not sure they want government to have that much more power, except when it comes to maybe the police and the military. Karen writes this, I work in Medicare appeals and know these seniors need this coverage by the heartfelt and desperation when coverage is denied. I have seen people who've had a regular plan and then because of a major medical issue end up having a dual Medicare-Medicaid plan because their savings are depleted. All right, so thank you for that. And James writes this, listening to Ronald Reagan reminds me that he is the one who started our decline, writes James. We did get another donation. Thank you very much, Ernie in Port Richey, for a $25 contribution. Ernie, thank you very much for your nice contribution. And we're probably just five or six calls now away from reaching that goal on this show. And here's an anonymous email from the 267 area code. They say it was the American Medical Association. It was known as Operation Coffee Cup, the program to undermine Medicare. All right. Thank you for that, 267. I'll look that up. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Sean in Tampa. Sean, thank you for calling the WMNF.
Hi, Rob. Your last caller, I agree with him. Number one, absolutely. You were talking about Roger Stone. Roger Stone lied to the FBI, lied to Congress, and for no apparent reason. Had he just told the truth, there were no charges. The reporter even said that he didn't take the threats that Stone had leveled seriously. But Roger Stone is a provocateur. He's a known liar. He doesn't care, and he was without a doubt proven guilty in court. And then for Trump to come in and throw his thumb on the scale, he is now to the point where he doesn't care. He thinks he can do anything because nothing he does will bring any kind of backlash.
And how do you feel about that?
I think it's outrageous, and I think more people should be up in arms. You're watching democracy go down the drain, and I think the entire Republican Senate is disgraceful. And you can tell me what you think.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot. No, I'm just going to hear from other people, but thank you very much for your impassioned call. I really appreciate it. 813-239-9663. Just a reminder that coming up in the next hour, Shelley Reback on Midpoint is going to have a program for Valentine's Day. It's all about matchmaking. So stick around for that. The matchmaking program coming up in the next hour right here on WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Tracy in St. Pete. Tracy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts?
Hi, I agree with your last caller. I think we should all be losing our minds. I don't understand why we aren't. I don't understand why we aren't out in the streets. But I don't understand why we haven't been there for years, truthfully. I mean, he's just been doing this over and over, and you know, the Republicans have been saying, oh, you guys are overreacting. You have Trump derangement syndrome. It's not that bad. Let me take a brief travel back in time to 2016. You remember when Bill Clinton got on a plane with Loretta Lynch for, what, a half hour, and people lost their freaking minds?
I remember that, yes.
They were talking about the investigation. He was telling her what to do about Hillary and blah, 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 and the Republicans lost their mind. Now, Trump is straight up saying that he is telling the Justice Department what to do, and nobody is doing anything about it. We are descending into authoritarianism. And I would also say, people are talking about how they don't care about getting power for businesses. Citizens United gave all the power in the world to the corporations and the big money donors. That is where a lot of this is coming from. A lot of this has to do with Citizens United and the fact that people can buy whatever they need now because dark money is fine in politics, according to conservative Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Tracy, thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you for making those points. You know, but Tracy did say that people aren't out in the streets. I've covered a bunch of demonstrations since President Trump was elected. There was an anti-gun violence demonstration shortly after the Parkland massacre in St. Petersburg. There were probably 10 or 15,000 people there. I went to an anti-Trump march the weekend after the election. And there were 2,000 people in downtown St. Petersburg. And I went to a women's march in St. Pete on the waterfront, and there were probably 20,000 people there. So I think people are out in the streets. The big women's march in Washington after the president was elected drew a record crowd. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for the matchmaking program on the Midpoint program with Shelley Reback. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks to Bill Grace. This is WMNF in Tampa. We did get another donation, so I think we're just 4 donations away. Thank you very much to Alex, who's in New Hampshire. A $2,500 donation. That is huge. This is WMNF Tampa.